This is MFG Out Loud. Courageous conversations about sales and marketing for today's manufacturers. With your hosts, Ray Zaganto and Allison DeFore.
Hey, today's topic might surprise you. So once you hear what it is, please don't swipe right. Stay with us. This is going to be really good for you. So, Ray, you remember that show in, I think it was maybe the late 60s, definitely early 70s, Love American Style?
Yeah. Want me to sing the theme?
Yes.
No.
Love, love, love. Love American Style. True it in the red, white, and blue.
You know what? Because I was like 7, 8, 9, and I just thought that was the dirtiest show just because it was so racy back then, right?
Yeah, right.
You know, today we're going to talk about Love Manufacturing Style.
Gasp.
And the reason being, so I think we're all going to agree on this. Traditionally, manufacturers have led with head over heart, right? Mm-hmm. That's what makes sense to us. We think that's how people make decisions. And we think most people are making decisions maybe with their left brain. So anything heart-centered and let's say incredibly specific has always been thought of as like soft, weak, limiting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that has changed. Times have changed. And I think it's really important that we like take a look at this and talk about why. So what do you think, Ray, has changed with love and manufacturing?
Well, I think what's even brought this conversation to the forefront today is it is a function of change. You know, in the past, for such a long time, there were a lot of ways you could differentiate your company at a time when there wasn't sufficient capacity to support all the activity that was going on. Your presence and your ability to expand was a point of differentiation. When you were able to do things in higher volume than the other people, that was a point of differentiation. But over time, a lot of those things have kind of leveled out a bit, and the new phenomenon that has presented itself, and manufacturing is still playing a little bit of catch-up, a lot of catch-up in this area, is kind of how people buy things today. And you've talked about this a bunch of times before, where what is it, something like 85-90% plus of the buying process, the research and everything else, occurs before the buying authority actually reaches out to the company they're interested in talking to, which is completely different than what many manufacturers have grown up with. Hell, it's even different than it was 10 years ago.
True.
And I think part of what has driven that change, you know, we tend to look in our own backyards for what's causing things to be different. And if you just look within the B2B world, it's hard to find, well, what is it that's changed? If you look over the fence into the B2C world, which is where people that do the purchasing and the specifying and the engineering and those types of things, that's where these people live when they're not at work. And their world, in that world, they're allowed to do a tremendous amount of research about the things they want to buy for their families or things that they need for the household or vacations they want to take, whatever. On your smartphone, you're able to do a tremendous amount of research all on your own and come to your own conclusions. Now, when you put that next to typical B2B sales, the way manufacturing does things, if we're still kind of in the features benefits mode, and we've talked about this before, and we'll get into more detail on B2B versus B2C in another episode, but the reality is how people are engaging with companies out on their personal lives is finding its way into how they're dealing with companies at work. And the way businesses get differentiated now, in addition to having all of the specifications that people want, is with so many choices out there, how do you stand out? And how can you really have that unique thing? And it comes down to your unique personality, the heart that is part of your business. And how are you communicating that? Because if you're not, you're just getting lost in the data, right?
Exactly. And, you know, if you're, there's got to be at least one competitor, if I had to lay money on it, that has already adopted this mindset, right? That is a more wholehearted business, a more wholehearted marketer. And they are the ones that are going to dominate, especially when the next downturn happens, right? Because they've spent more time creating, cultivating relationships, a community outside of just your salespeople, your boots on the ground.
Right.
They've created this alignment that goes way deeper, right, than just this rational surface level. I think that's the bottom line.
Right. Right. And I think part of the where manufacturers get a little bit stuck is the way we sold in the past was we'd sit around the table, think of the features and benefits, put that together in the brochure, and then send the salesperson out there, and then a miracle would occur. And what they lose sight of is that in earlier environments, it was you could achieve sufficient scale by having a salesperson out there who was likely doing something that really wasn't on your radar, which was building relationships. And what I see time and time again today is manufacturing clients that have been around a long time, and they're like, even our best salespeople, they can't get appointments like they used to. Well, in large part, you don't have to get appointments like you used to, because a lot of the decisions and the reviews are happening online, like we just talked about. So how are you injecting that emotion, you know, that feeling that is so important to make that current or that prospective client feel welcome and attracted to your business? So the playing field has changed, and it's not like a memo went out and told everybody. It just kind of happened. The B2C community caught it pretty quickly. Hell, they just about invented it. And it's finding its way into B2B.
Well, and I think that point that you brought up is nuts on. People have thought for so long in this space that, I mean, heck, I think we both did years ago, you know, oh, B2B is very different than B2C. It's not the same. You don't talk to people in the same way. You don't market the same. Why on earth would we want to look at what B2C is doing? You know, they're direct to consumer. Well, I think as you pointed out at the beginning here, the lines are becoming blurred, right? Thank you, Amazon. Thank you, Google. Thank you, smartphone. And because we have so much power in our hand all the time, because communication has changed and has sped up a thousandfold, it's no longer, I think, up for debate. Right? It's people to people now. I mean, clearly there's still some things that are different, but I think in terms of marketing, we can definitely take some cues from B2C.
Oh, yeah. Well, I totally agree. You know, one of the things that was kind of crazy running through my mind, I mean, I'm old enough to remember when mobile phones first came out, and I remember running up $1,000 bills, from the company I was working for, driving around with my trunk mounted, system at a time when the system was analog and it was, capacity constraints were such that, you could charge the carriers could charge a premium. Well, then along comes digital. And all of a sudden, for a given given channel, they could have many orders of magnitude more calls, going through. And I think our ability to communicate out into the marketplace and the world has moved in a similar way. Analog was how many people can I send a mailing out to, or how many people are going to look us up in the phone book. If I run an ad in that magazine. Now, with the different social media channels and everything else that are available to do research, you're going out to the market you're reaching is much, much larger, but they're engaging with you differently. And if you don't sync up with the way they want to drive the engagement, the transaction, you'll be overlooked.
Yeah, and become irrelevant.
Right.
Really quickly. Right. I think it's important too to just toss out, there's a couple of companies that we both love that really flipped this notion on its ear in terms of embracing heart over head, in terms of how they connect with their audiences, how they sell, how they market. So if you're not already following these companies, at least on LinkedIn, but really on all the social platforms, we highly recommend that you do. And that would be Big Ass Fans, mm-hmm. Apple, clearly. Think about it. Before them, what computer manufacturer marketed to you with heart or creativity? Right. No one that I can remember. Another company to follow, Warby Parker. Definitely, a mission, a cause-driven company, and especially, millennials and I think younger generations are aligning themselves more quickly with companies who stand for something. Mm-hmm. So Warby Parker is a great example. Harry's, if you've been into Target, they are eclipsing or will, I think, eventually giving Gillette and Bic a run for their money with razors. They're changing the game. Patagonia, right? Same thing with clothing. It's way more about the audience and the people and solving the problems that they have. And also, again, cause-based, there's a big mission behind Patagonia. And they are, I feel like, a heart-based company.
The companies that you just listed, something to consider there. Those are, by and large organizations. So for the manufacturers out there, what are the latest statistics? Like 356,000 companies, manufacturing companies in the United States have less than 500 employees. Okay. So for those folks, that are listening, whether it's one person or 500, whatever it happens to be, if you're wondering whether or not, standing for something, having a message or having a story matters, look at what's going on with craft breweries or craft whiskey or craft anything. There is a compelling case and multiple examples in the world today, certainly across the United States, of craft manufacturers, companies that stand for something. It has nothing to do with scale. It has everything to do with heart and what your passion is and knowing who your audience is and inviting them into your story. So don't think that if you don't have a $1 trillion valuation, you can't afford to, express these types of things to your potential clients. It has nothing to do with it.
You know what? I couldn't agree more. I am so glad you brought that up. And one company, I probably talk about them a lot lately, but I'm just loving what they're doing, is Hyatt Denim. Mm-hmm. IUT. Follow them online if you're not already. And here's a great example of a small startup manufacturer who just a couple of years ago took a huge risk, and they are banking on heart and craftsmanship, and they are rocking it and growing their community really quickly. And so, yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up, because I think people do ask that. We get asked that all the time, especially sure. like really small manufacturers. They're like, you know, is all this stuff for me? Do I need to bother? And as you just said, yes. This is not just for big companies.
Exactly. And again, the platforms and the forums are there. You know, I'll throw out a few examples. Titan Gilroy and what he's doing with Titans of CNC. You know, there's a business that's in aerospace doing some of the most sophisticated stuff in the world. But what he's doing and giving back to the manufacturing community in terms of training. You know, there's manufacturing leaders in the Chicago area, Pioneer Services and Anissa Mutana, and the business that she's building. And the passion that's behind it, and guys like Jim Carr Machine.
Yep.
You know, it was the first time I met Jim, and he said that what he wanted to do was create a Nordstrom-like experience for his customers in manufacturing. And to this day, he lives that and breathes it, and is doing very well. It's served him well. It's not about scale; it's about living your truth. And he put a stake in the ground and committed to it. All of those people did. And it's serving them very well.
Yes, yes. So, you know, as we always do, I think it's really important to talk about the elephant in the room. What do you think is holding manufacturers back from embracing this whole love thing?
You know, I think it's, just to put it out there, I think it's fear. Because for the first time, yeah, there's a circumstance in the environment that is forcing manufacturers to define something about themselves that they've never really had to address. And that is, they have to actually admit that they may not know right now why they do what they do. And, you know, it's a little internal, you know, personal reflection that has to go on. And I don't think it's that far beneath the surface. It's just not something that's been a topic of conversation or that's really been necessary until now. It is necessary. This isn't something that would be nice down the road, but believe me, 3 years from now, you know, you really shouldn't be having this conversation. 12 months from now, you really shouldn't be having it. Start talking about it now, because the more comfortable you become with the boundaries of who you are and what you believe in, that's going to help define a lot of what you do and how you do it in terms of your social media strategy, how you do your marketing communications, what you communicate to your, how your sales team engages, how you, you know, how and if you're even thinking about what your customer journey is, because that's what you need to do today. Take a realistic look at what's the customer journey and where and how do we fit in to give them a better experience than anybody else.
Absolutely. And this is like 12 future episodes in one conversation. So that's why we're just touching on some of these things. But this also ties back to culture. Mm-hmm. How many times have you worked with a manufacturer and they were gung-ho about creating a stronger position, implementing an actual marketing strategy, sometimes for the first time, which is fantastic. And then after you worked with them for a while, it became really clear that internally, they were the dysfunctional family.
We all are.
And well, to some degree, right? But
yeah.
Lack of culture. So yeah. Understanding what your culture is it's seen from the outside and it affects how people feel about you. It affects how your salespeople show up online or offline. It affects how your customer service people treat customers. So I like to just throw that out there because, you know, we are going to do a whole episode on culture, but I've talked to many manufacturers who have said to me, customers don't really care about that though, right? Well, they do. And it's because you know, you can't put lipstick on a pig.
Yeah.
Pig. And I'm just using that loosely, but, you know, people can see through you. Yeah. So it's important to make sure that your culture is aligned as well with your intentions and this wholehearted mission that you're going to be on.
Exactly. And there's, again, we don't need to have 30 episodes all in one, but you know, culture is behavior. And from a customer experience standpoint, I'll give one example. Every company I've had the privilege of working for directly, at one point or another, I had something to do with sales there. And the one thing I always brought up, and this goes back to the sometimes the older model, hey, the salesperson shows up, goes to the lobby, fills out the book. Well, we used to always read through the book to see who else was there. And I always told the people on my sales team, I said, you know what? What I want to have happen is that when we sign in, when our competitor comes and sees that, you know, that we had signed in, that we had already been there before them, I want them to turn around and just walk out and go, fuck it. we don't have a chance. You know, these guys, you know, they've already been here and they do such an awesome job. You know, we can't keep up. You know, so but I think that's part of it. How do you want to show up? What do you want people to say when you show up?
How do you want them to feel?
Yeah, exactly. That's
really what we're talking about here, right? When you are engaging emotionally and loving people, loving customers, we're really talking about how you're making them feel. That's what this is about.
You're right.
And, you know, the other thing that fascinates me, we hear this from people all the time. And we like to call this scenario junior versus senior. So multi-generational company, family run, and junior is now in charge of marketing, sometimes of marketing and sales. Sometimes they're the acting CEO or president. And they reach out to both of us and we have conversations. We've worked with some of them. And they get all of this wholeheartedly, 100%. The problem they're having is they can't convince senior. They can't convince dad or grandpa or the board. And I think this is another thing. Again, we addressed this in a previous episode. Some of the challenges that come with being a family-run business. But I think the thing here is, senior can't or doesn't want to see the value in serving people, I guess, versus selling them. They're all about relationships. And I don't know. I just feel like they're stuck in features and benefits land. You know, it's like a features and benefits hangover. And they can't get past it because, like you said a minute ago, it feels too scary.
Yeah, it's unfamiliar, you know, and to them, because they can't compare it to anything or they don't have the context for it.
Yeah.
I think that it equals risk, you know, so it goes back to that thing. It's scary. You know, you don't know what to do, you know, not to foreshadow another episode, but we've had more than a couple of these junior senior conversations, and I know we've got one in the hopper about ageism, and that one's going to be fun because both sides are right sometimes. So yes. it's going to be a good one to explore.
Well, so let's get tactical. You know,
all right.
Everybody can listen to us, you know, talk back and forth about the subject matter, but I think, as we know, what people really care about is like, okay, what can I do with it? How can I use this to make my manufacturing operation better, to make my sales easier? So I think an important thing to understand or consider, and this might surprise some people, but I always tell people, slow down before you speed up. Right? People are so gung-ho of, okay, we need a new website. Yeah, we're going to do a social media campaign this year. Okay, before you jump into those things, I just advise you to slow down, take a breath, and just look inside, right? And take a look at your why, at your position, your unique differentiator, your unique value proposition. What is your brand promise? Do you have all those things dialed in? Do you have brand personas, or sorry, audience personas created? You know who you're talking to and who you matter to. If you have all that dialed in, then go full steam ahead. You're ready for those amplifiers. That's really all those are. Mm-hmm. Right? Your website, your social media, print, trade show. Those are all just amplifiers. So I just caution people to remember that. Those are just blasting your message. But if the message isn't tied to intention and a clear position, it just becomes noise.
Yeah.
And it's easily dismissed. And people just turn down the volume and move on.
Yep. And what's there's a difference with a distinction there too, is it has to be consistent with who you really are. It's not like you can sit in a room with a guru that says, well, if these are your personas, if you say these things, then boy, are they going to be thrilled. But if you can't live what you're telling them, very quickly they're going to find out at a minimum you're being disingenuous. At a maximum, you're outright lying to them and misleading them. So if you really, the more genuine you are, mm-hmm. The stronger the connection is going to be to those personas.
Absolutely. Transparency is king. Another thing that you can do as a manufacturer is you can do a spot analysis of yourself. You do them all the time for the company. So maybe you haven't done one for a while, and we like to call them spot instead of SWOT, because we feel like weakness is really just a problem, and problems can be overcome with strengths and opportunities, right? So, and we've said this before, and we'll probably say it 100 times again, do it with each department, like really break it down. And then when you bring those results together, you will compile this overall SWOT analysis that is much more accurate than if you just sit in the room with, say, your marketing consultant or your director of marketing or, whoever you do this exercise with. You'll get a clearer picture. And you can, if you're a really small manufacturer and you can't afford a marketing person or a consultant, you can do this on your own. I think that's the other important thing to note is don't let money hold you back.
Right.
And I think the other thing you can do is you can figure out, what is it that you do better than anybody else? What is that unfair advantage that only you bring, right? The thing that you're known for, the thing that really aligns you with your customers or potential customers, the thing that they love about you. It probably isn't necessarily your widget, right?
Right.
Probably right. Something else, which again comes back to emotional attachment. I think it's important too to take a look at companies, and especially in B2C, but definitely in your space, who are having massive success with this model, and kind of take a look at what they're doing that's working. Mm-hmm. You can learn a lot from just looking around you. We live in this space. I mean, we do it, every single day, and then share this with our tribe, right? That's mm-hmm. part of what we do on this podcast. So really looking outside and bringing things in that you may not have considered before. Another quick thing you can do, do a 5-second test of your website. have people look at your website that are not in your space and say, in 5 seconds, is it clear to you what our position is, what problem we solve, and who we solve it for? Right? Because that goes back to this heart thing, this love thing. If you, who is it that you are serving? If somebody can look at your website in 5 seconds and they can't tell, there's some opportunity for you.
Right.
Right. Revisit that. Make some modifications. A lot of this is content, right? It's how you articulate it. You talk for a minute, again, if you would, about customer journeys. I think that's an important thing that you can do on your own.
I'm talking again.
Yes.
You're on such a roll.
Here am I.
You know, one of the things that was running through my mind as you were going through these tactical things that our listeners can pursue in the manufacturing space. If you want to look at who is facing a very demanding clientele, and you know, who are the examples you could look to that you can probably relate to. There's been a lot of innovation happening if you look at in the B2B space, where companies are trying to get to that next level of value add and those things. Look at some of your distributors, you know, because if you think about it, the company that's distributing, you know, mills and grinding wheels and safety equipment and stuff like that, odds are they don't make any of it. They're in the middle of it. So they're dealing with a complicated supply chain, zillions of part numbers, and with all due respect, our listeners can be some of the toughest customers in the world to have to keep happy on a regular basis. How are your good vendors doing that for you? You know, and that's a good thing to look at. So part of it, circling back, what's a good customer journey look like for you when you're engaging with your suppliers? And then think about your customers. They'll tell you, if you ask them, hey, what would make your life easier? And once you get done having a good laugh about, well, if what you sold us was free and we could have it tomorrow, life would be perfect. Well, we know that's not going to happen. But somewhere in there, eventually, you'll get to the point where it's like, boy, the biggest thing we're tracking, what matters most to us internally, is this thing. And if you could help us with that, boy, we'd give you all the work. You know, or whatever. You got to talk to your customer. You know, don't guess, ask them.
So you say, okay, what would make, right? What would make this a better customer journey? If you could have anything you wanted, well, I'd like your stuff to be free. Okay, great. And what else?
Right.
And what else? And what else? And after you do that literally like 25 times, you will have an incredible list that you can then pare down, and it will help you see right?
Turn this back into something, you know, manufacturers understand. When you're going through a problem solving exercise or trying to get to the root cause of a problem, you know, what's one of the tools that's used? Well, the five whys, you know, same thing. Okay. Our customers want this. Why? You know, well, because of this other thing. Well, why? You know, it doesn't only apply to a manufacturing process. You know, put it to work on how does it work when your customer reaches out to customer service? Does it work well? You know, are we able to answer their calls quickly? There's a lot of things you can interrogate using tools that are very familiar to you.
Yeah. Really taking a look at every customer touch point in the journey. I think you could ask the why questions and really gain a lot of perspective. So again, it takes a little bit of time, takes a little bit of effort. You don't have to spend a lot of money on it. You can if you want to, if you have that budget, but you can really help yourself.
Right.
And you know, your customers will thank you. So, hey, let's wrap this up.
All right.
So what we learned is love manufacturing style is actually a thing.
Yay.
Showing up a lot differently, like you said, than it did, you know, even 10 years ago.
Right.
So if you don't pay attention, own a position that customers won't or can't copy, and love your customers at every touch point, you know, just ask yourself, what's going to happen as soon as the next downturn happens? You know, it's just going to make it harder for you. So a lot of this is like, think of it as insurance. Mm-hmm. And, you know, will they up and leave you for the cheapest gig in town, or will they stay because what they get from you is worth its weight in gold?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, hey, as always, thank you so much for listening to this podcast and being part of this tribe. We appreciate you. And if you're not already, please subscribe. Sharing is also caring. So tell a colleague to tune in, because it's time to get real already.
And remember, keep manufacturing out loud, because we need you.
Thank you for listening to MFG Out Loud with Ray Zaganto and Allison DeFore. You can subscribe and find show notes at mfgoutloud.com.